This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Welcome to Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, witches, bitches and shrews, the wise woman archetype in speculative fiction.
It's September, Jules. You know what that means.
Almost Halloween.
Yes! Yes! Very excited. It's also my birthday first, so I'm just going to put that out there.
Yes.
My birthday.
That's true.
By the time this episode airs, though, I think my birthday will have passed.
You completely throw me, though, because you celebrate your birthday in August, so...
Yeah, well, that was because my birthday's, like, mid-September, and it was always the time when everyone would be going back to school and stuff like that, or yeah. Going back to uni. So it always made sense to celebrate a month earlier, because first of all, the weather was usually better, but second of all, everyone was available, because it was mid-August, you know?
Yeah.
No one's doing anything in August. So I celebrate it. I do the party a month early because people are available. And then I usually have a little family thing for my actual birthday. Because I used to try and celebrate it on my actual birthday and no one was around. It was always sad.
Oh.
Yeah. So there you go. But yeah, we've got Halloween coming up. We've got Samhain. I'm sure we'll do a special episode just for that.
Yeah. Normally do.
Good. But it does feel appropriate to be talking about witches.
Yes, and obviously they loom large in speculative fiction in all kinds of guises, and it's worth looking at where that sort of archetypes come from, because we've never had a witch episode on its own. It's always been witches tagged in with vampires and werewolves and mermaids and what have you. So
Well, I think the first sort of witch episode we had, as it were, was actually about children's fiction, because we obviously had the lovely James Nicol on the show with us.
Yeah, talking about The Apprentice Witch, the second book of which is coming out fairly soon, isn't it?
We need to nab him, don't we?
We do. Well, I was more thinking I need the book first, because I tend to go for the book before the author, but yeah, definitely.
James, come back onto our show. He might be too big for us now.
He might be.
Yeah.
Definitely gained some traction.
Anyway, we're going to be talking about witches today. Oddly enough, the first thing, when we were going through our list of witch books, Jules and I both came to the same one, which was The Whitby Witches.
Yes.
Because Jules is a bit of a fan.
I am a Robin Jarvis fan. And I think, I sort of discovered his books when I was 13. Mm-hmm. And I suppose it's a bit like someone else discovering Lovecraft, you know? Everything's a bit bleak. And he's got a kill ratio that, you know, it's not quite George R. R. Martin's standards, but you could put him almost in the same bracket. It's like, don't get too attached to anybody, particularly in some of his books, like the Dancing Jacks trilogy. It's like, don't get attached to anyone in that, honestly. But yeah, because Madeline was just saying that, oh, I was, you know, upset that one of the characters has been killed off. And I'm like, yeah, that's not the only one in that in that book.
Do you know how worried I am? Because, I am enjoying it, but I haven't finished it quite yet. Before we get on to the books itself, let's talk about witches and what we mean by witches and what history means by witches.
It's a bit of a tricky one, really. I mean, the actual word witch comes from visse, which is an Anglo-Saxon word, which means wisdom.
Mm.
But at the same time, if you read Anglo-Saxon, I mean, I don't know, people probably do read Anglo-Saxon who aren't me. But there's got to be other word nerds out there who like Anglo-Saxon. It can't just be me. But Anglo-Saxon's a funny language in the sense of there's not a lot of vocabulary if you compare it to other languages. So all of it is about word positioning and nuance. So the word visse or witch actually can mean something quite negative. It can mean something quite dangerous. It can just mean, you know, a woman who knows about healing.
Mm.
It sort of encompasses all these things. That's where we get the modern sort of neo-pagan word Wicca. So yeah, I think that's the thing with the Anglo-Saxon word, is the fact that the word that's derived from it sort of encompasses all those things. But we've lost a lot of the positives over the years. It used to be a semi-respectable sort of almost a profession.
Yeah.
But it can also just mean any woman who happens to know a little bit and live on her own.
Yeah. And I think probably it was very much down to the fact that it was women.
Yes.
And at some point around the sort of, well, before the 1500s, to be honest, but yeah, around the 1500s, they didn't really want women in positions of power anymore.
Yeah.
in any shape or form. And so pretty much anyone who was labelled a witch, or imagery, the image of what the witch was taken from positions of power, which weren't to do with birth power, I should add. Yeah. This was to do with intelligence, it was to do with agency, it was to do with, you know, ability. And they were associated with very negative things.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. We were also thinking, how far back in history can we think of witches as being mentioned in some sort of historical record?
Yeah.
About as far back as I can think of off the top of my head is the Witch of Endor, which you find in the Book of Solomon in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
It's kind of been edited out of a few other versions of the Bible, but it's in the main King James one. And Samuel died, current king of Israel, Saul, sought wisdom from God and didn't get any answers. So he went to a witch instead.
This is why God needs to answer his phone.
Yeah, but the problem is that Saul had dedicated a lot of his career as king to driving out all the necromancers and magicians from Israel. And if he didn't drive them out, he just killed them. So he disguises himself and goes looking for a witch. He does find himself a witch, the Witch of Endor. Her name never gets mentioned. She's just known as the Witch of Endor, the Woman of Endor. Mm-hmm. Woman and witch in that passage of the Bible are synonymous. That's the really funny thing. And she calls up the ghost of the prophet Samuel from the abode of the dead. And the prophet's ghost complains about being disturbed, tells Saul off for disobeying God, and predicts Saul's downfall, and then leaves.
Ciao! And,
so it wasn't a very successful mission for King Saul. But the witch herself, sees that he's actually quite upset that Samuel has basically said, why the fuck did you wake me up? And by the way, God told you to kill these people. Why are you talking to her? And she comforts him and feeds him before sending him on his way.
And then presumably he sends soldiers back to kill her.
Well, actually, the next day Saul's army was defeated and Saul commits suicide.
Well,
so I don't think he got on that, really. But this is going back a long time. This is at least sort of 4,000 years, if not a bit more. So that's as early as I can think of the specific term witch coming up. But the word wouldn't have been witch. It would have been written in Aramaic, so they wouldn't have used Anglo-Saxon, strangely enough.
What? That's bizarre. I thought everyone spoke English. The interesting thing is that, obviously, in the Middle Ages, witches became connected with demons.
Yeah.
And, you know, one way that you would be able to find a witch would be to find the third nipple, which was a blemish or a mark, which during the Middle Ages, you'd be hard-pressed not to have a single blemish or mark.
Yes.
On your body, so, you know, you were screwed. If they said, right, we're going to check you for a blemish, you'd be like, uh-oh.
I have a flea bite kind of thing.
Exactly. I have a flea bite, I have a pretty much anything. And it was where their familiars would feed from them. And the idea was that, yeah, they would make deals with demons and with the devil. And this became synonymous with witchcraft and became synonymous with witches, which was funny because Solomon, obviously, and they were jinn, but demons, jinn, they're sort of all lumped into the same kind of category as far as the King James Bible was concerned. And other texts as well, enslaved a bunch of demons to build stuff for him. And this was never frowned at, because he wasn't a woman. Now, I think there was probably other things as well. But it was never frowned at, and the idea of what witch means and what was connected to it, I think changed depending on what people were afraid of and what people admired at any one time. And it really does go to show the gender politics. Though I should add that it wasn't just women who were witches, it was men as well. But the original kind of gender politics that went into discrediting women by applying what people were afraid of most at any given time, I think really that's where it started, even if it was subconscious, that people said, oh, we don't like these women, let's attach negative, not criteria, but yeah, let's attach negative sort of imagery to that and apply how they look to be connected with witchcraft and demons and whatever people were afraid of at any one given time. And that kind of took off a little bit too well, to the point where it wasn't actually just about belittling women anymore. It also took on a genuine fear, because people were genuinely taken by these things during certain periods.
Yeah, I think the Abrahamic religions do actually have a lot to answer for there, because you obviously have, as we've said, that persecution of witches by the King Saul of Israel originally.
Thanks,
and
Saul.
Then that sort of was then later used, again, as you say, by the very people who in the medieval era produced things like the Malleus Maleficarum, the witch's hammer, which is a tiny little pamphlet on how to spot a witch and and what to do with one when you've got one.
Yeah, it's not very pleasant.
You know, there's lots involved. Most big organised religions are all about control and obviously redistribution of wealth towards themselves.
Yes, of course.
You only need a few cynical people who are interested in that side of things at the top, taking advantage of the faithful and finding the best way to do that. And the best way to do that was to subjugate an entire gender, which is where a lot of that came from. Because if you ever look at the Malleus Maleficarum, or, you know, it was written in Latin, so a translation, it is almost exclusively directed at women, and it's almost exclusively directed at things like women showing cunning. And that's not cunning in the sense of I'm really good at cards, that's cunning in the sense of knowledge, any knowledge at all, really, that... Yeah. Is designated outside their remit. So a woman who could read and write, for example, or a woman who knew about herbs and medicines.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was, they were also necessary evils. We've mentioned before, I think when you were talking about Macbeth with Matt a few episodes ago, you were talking about how James was really freaked out by witches.
Yeah.
Which he was. But he was also the one who formed the Order of the Garter, I think. And he also said...
But for some of the more ignorant among us, could you explain what the Order of the Garter is? Because all I'm imagining is James parading or prancing around in garters and nothing else. My lord, please.
I can't entirely speak for the veracity of this, but during the reign of James... particularly women, but anyone who had an interest in that sort of esoteric knowledge,
mm-hmm.
which was very frowned on. They didn't burn you as a witch, they burnt you as a heretic. But if you're a witch, you're assumed to be a heretic, so...
Right, yeah.
That was all bad. But one of the things they used to do to distinguish... You know, it was the same way that the Christians used to draw the half-fish ichthus symbol during the time of the persecutions. Witches would wear a garter.
Right.
Under their robes and things. It was a way of identifying themselves to each other. And there is a story, and I really don't know how true it is, of a woman who was in the presence of James, and her garter dropped, so it was visible around her ankle. And the natural thing would have been to persecute someone who was wearing a garter. This sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? But I'm pretty sure this is an actual story. James was expected to persecute her for being a witch, basically, because she was wearing a garter. And he is supposed to have said something along the lines of, you know, it's no business of mine. And of course, people did wear garters to keep their hose and things up at the time as well. So I think, according to legend, he is supposed to have dropped a garter of his own. And then, because the king did it, everybody else there had to as well.
Got dropping garters left, right and centre.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. As I said, this might just be popular legend, but he was known for, while he was freaked out by genuine sort of supernatural witchcraft, he was actually quite protective of the cunning woman, the women, he wouldn't persecute people who provided what he considered a natural and necessary service. So there was that side of things. So, I mean, it's interesting. It depends. And this is coming off the back of the really bad, I mean, that we've had several bouts of bad witch trials and things. But if you weren't trucking with demons, it's like it was no business of his kind of thing.
The other thing is it was, witch trials were sort of popular during that time because people wanted to get the nod from King James to say, oh, look, we hunted through our town and caught 5 witches. We killed them, my lord. And he's like, yeah, excellent, good work. Yes, the king said we did good work. And it was literally about just a citizen. At that point, it was very much, it wasn't that people genuinely thought there were witches. It was they went looking for them so that they could actually say that they'd hunted some witches.
And then there's the mindset that you have to bear in mind that witches forfeited all their worldly goods. So it was worthwhile accusing a wealthy woman on her own and mm-hmm. getting her convicted because the accuser got a portion of that wealth.
Yeah.
So there's an obvious flaw in the system right there. That was more prevalent among, say, the Salem witch trials, but it did happen over here. This is where it originated.
Yeah, it also happened in Scotland, I say. It did happen in Scotland.
Oh, yeah, I mean, the Scots were burning witches merrily right up to the 18th century, you know?
I mean, they had a real thing for it.
We stopped actually burning witches for being witches in England. I think it was something in the 13th century, so we burned heretics.
Sure. We did. I'm not sure actually whether there were many witch burnings in Ireland, actually. No, I think they mostly just, they got a bit of a whipping, but they didn't really kill witches there. They just sort of went, all right, see you next Sunday.
Yeah. It's
like, bad witchcraft, I'll be over later for some of that potion.
And that's where it got tricky, because they might not hang you for being a witch in Ireland, but they would hang you if you were, they believed you'd murdered somebody with your witchcraft. Mm. So that's where it all gets a bit tricky. And if you've ever read any of the trials and things, they're absolutely mental. And I mentioned before, I read Hannah Kent's The Good People recently. There's a woman who loses her husband and she's lost her daughter and she's left with her grandson who seems to have either have had some sort of infantile stroke or he's got some sort of affective brain disorder, which means he can't use his legs, he can't speak, and his hands are sort of clawing in on himself. And, you know, he's clearly mentally not very progressive and he's not thriving.
Yeah.
There's something very wrong with him, just physical health-wise. But this is a very poor rural farming community, just after the potato famine.
Ah, right.
Just before the potato famine. But measures were already been taken, put in place to stop people becoming wealthy in Ireland, because the English wanted the land for themselves.
Yeah.
So there was, ignorance was endemic. There was no schools, there was nothing like that. You know, we did actually have schools set up over here for some poor children who, you know, they may or may not have gone to school, but, you know, there was at least some sort of recourse. That was actually actively discouraged. And the difference in knowledge levels between those who happened to live in the cities and those who lived out in the sticks, it was like almost two different cultures.
Yeah.
And they were losing a way of life as well, which didn't help. So you had the superstitions of the old and the traditions of the old, which were actually really important for the community, butting heads against the more progressive, more English mindset. I mean, it exists still in Irish slang today. If you call someone a jackeen in Ireland, that's slang for someone who supports the English, and it's not a flattering term at all.
No.
And to say that someone's given you English justice, well, actually, that's no justice at all.
Yeah.
So,
doesn't surprise me in the least.
You know, that there's it's not so much race memory, but there's a long history of, there are things there that I think it would do everyone good to remember so that people could then move on from it, basically.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm digressing slightly. The good people, this little boy is such a burden on this woman, and then things start to happen, like the potato crop starts to fail and the cows start to not give milk. There's a very hard winter. This was a time when everybody went barefoot, even in the winter kind of thing.
Yeah.
it's that far out. And then other people sicken and die. Somebody's skirts catch fire when they're sat too close to the peat fire. They lived in these one-room hovels, and they huddled over peat fires. And peat fires burn very hot, but they don't burn very bright. It wasn't unusual for women who wore ankle-length skirts to suddenly have their skirts catch fire. So another flaw in the design. But all these things gradually get blamed on this child, which they think is a changeling. And there's lots of mutterings and ugliness. And this woman's desperate to get her actual grandson back from the good people rather than this changeling, because she can't encompass that he might have something like cerebral palsy with other issues as well. And she goes to the local cunning woman who has done a lot of good and is supposed to have contact with the good people. And they end up accidentally killing the child, and they get taken to prison, and they go to trial. And then ultimately, while they say, yeah, you are guilty of killing the child, because they genuinely believe that what they were trying to do was get a changeling exchanged back for a human child, and nobody really wants the cost of hanging them, and they're both old women, etc. They both, they're sort of like, they're released. After 3 months in prison and a trial, they're like, yeah, we can't be bothered to hang you. They're sent on.
Out you go.
And the whole thing's like completely believable, but really horrific. It's a good book. It's a good book, but that sort of thing does happen. There's folk songs about the witch who did you murder. I think I can't remember the song itself, but there's a folk song that basically goes, "Old mole who lives by the water, did you drown that child?"
And we know some very dark folk songs.
We do. Let's be honest, folk songs aren't happy. They're all about sex, death, politics. So,
Yep.
It's not great. Child murder. There's a lot of child murder as well.
There's a lot of child murder. The murder full stop.
But going on from sort of the whole Irish type witch thing, which is almost a separate thing of itself, this was set at the time when Christianity was trying... It wasn't that the Irish church was still more under the Celtic Rite as we were over here back in the 10th and 11th centuries. It was more a case of that Irish Catholicism was a lot more permissive back then. And then it was sort of steering to we're getting a very strict Vatican I order saying that, you know, you must not allow these things to happen. And they were getting rid of things like keening. Keening was outlawed. And keening is where you hired, or sometimes you would just, if it was friendship and you had the right person, you'd have a wise woman, a cunning woman, or a handy woman keen at a relative's funeral. And it comes from the Irish word cownach, which means to cry or weep. And it was a professional thing that was done. And I think there's a... Sometime it's not really supposed to happen. I think people turn a blind eye to it. It still occasionally happens now. But that was the tradition. You wouldn't have a big funeral, but you would have a big wake, and you would make quite a production out of the grief. And the reason you'd do that was because it was such a hard life that you had to pretty much exorcise the whole thing in one evening. And it was a community event. It was something that where you showed support. And it was very cathartic to be able to do it that way.
Yeah.
So that being taken away and getting rid of the Bay and Cante, which were the keening women, was probably a really cruel thing to do for these small communities that were sort of mired in ignorance.
Yeah.
But that was one of the jobs of the handy women. And the reason I mention this is because my great-great-grandmother was a... there's a line of them. But they were handy women. They used to help with the childbirth, laying out of bodies, and keening.
From a long line of witches.
Well, I mean, are they? That's the thing. Because are handy women witches? Are cunning women witches? That's the crossover point, isn't it?
Let's talk about alewives.
Yes.
So an alewife, or a brewess, these were women who historically brewed ale. And I actually didn't know anything about them until earlier this week, when I saw something and I sort of dug into it a little bit. I sent it to Jules. I was like, oh, this is appropriate for the episode we're about to do. And I think they sort of, the alewives, at least written-wise, sort of the first mention of them was around the 15th century, and they would brew ale, and they would sell it. And a lot of the apparently a lot of the imagery that went along with ale, with ale houses and ale wives, is now associated with witches. So, for instance, they would wear tall black hats so that they could be seen in public from afar. You'd see the tip of a hat and you'd know, ah, there's ale over there. I can buy ale over there. They would use the broomstick over their door to, again, it was a form of advertising to say that there is ale here. And they'd often keep cats close to them, presumably to keep away mice and rodents. So a lot, again, we have a lot of that imagery, and alewives, it was a female job, but then men happened.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, there's a long tradition of women, brewing is traditionally a woman's task, and that goes back thousands of years.
Yeah, back so, to ancient Mesopotamia. I can't say it.
Mesopotamia?
Yeah, thank you.
Mesopotamia. Yeah, and it happened obviously in Egypt as well. There was a reason that the Hebrews were given beer by the Egyptian slave masters, because, you know, the alcohol keeps them compliant, and it was basically bread in liquid form, which was much cheaper to produce. So, yeah, I mean, there is that sort of, there's a beer goggles type association there as well. As in, well, she gave me something that altered my state of consciousness, and then I went and did something I regretted, and now my wife's mad at me. So,
I think, yeah, it was something that brewing was associated with women, but I think that what was really happening was that women were making a success of this. It was very popular. Ale was easy to drink. It was filling, as you said. It was also safer than water.
Yes, much safer. There's a good chance that you would have killed off tapeworms in the ale.
Yeah. So I imagine that anyone who brewed ale, these women who were brewing ale, would probably be doing incredibly well. And so men wanted in on the business, and they didn't want women there. And what really sort of happened is that they started to associate, it was the women in these positions of power are bad. And so suddenly, all of the women in position of power, the things associated with that, were then started to be associated with witches. The tall black hat, the cat, the broomstick. I mean, the broomstick obviously has other connotations as well, but you know what I mean.
That might have been a subtle form of advertising, because sex does sell.
Yeah.
That is obviously what the broomstick is. it's a phallic symbol.
So, very suddenly, you know, I was also around the plague was when sort of brewing really, really kind of changed. And yeah, the men sort of took over. But I don't think they ever really, really took over completely, because I think there was just too much of a history there. But it was very much about repressing women.
Yeah, let's keep that particular gender in their place. And again, this is backed up by the church.
But I didn't know anything about the alewives at all.
I'd never heard
about that.
I'd heard something. I didn't know about the tall black hats or anything, but it sort of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. And if you go onto the Wikipedia page, there is a print of a Mother Lewis, who is apparently an alewife in Oxford during the 18th century. And she looks like a witch. She genuinely does. She's got all of the kind of associations of a witch. She has the pointed chin, the long nose, the tall black hat, the kind of crone-like features that one associates with a witch. Which also brings me on to another group of highly repressed and what's the word when you purposefully attack a group of people? Jules, help me out here.
When you purposefully attack a group of people?
Yeah.
In what way?
You know, like we say that women are oppressed, and that, you know, it was like, it's not malignant, Jesus, I can't speak today. But it's on purpose, you know, these people are being repressed on purpose. I can't remember. But yeah, so we should look at Judaism and the Jewish people, who again were associated with witchcraft, because the Jewish people have been notoriously abused and attacked throughout history in most cultures. And again, a lot of the things that one associates with the stereotype of the Jew ties in with the stereotype of the witch.
Yeah.
So the nose.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's also the thing with a lot of Jewish women, Jewish women and men who you would have found sort of from the 8th, 9th century, etc., in the UK, for example, mm-hmm. were generally trading.
Yeah.
And they were part of a mercantile family often, and, you know, they tended to run quite successful businesses. But a lot of the daughters of those houses were reasonably well educated, mm. and they also offered healing services, which it's a double-edged sword, really, isn't it? Learning to be any sort of healer and being able to affect the human body, because on one hand, yay, that person's now not going to die because you managed to stitch that wound up. But on the other hand, it's kind of like, well, she stitched it up, it must be magic.
Yeah.
You know, she stitched it up and she was quite fit, and now I have an erection I probably shouldn't have, so I'm going to blame her for it.
Exactly.
Putting it crudely.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. There's also, you know, there's other associations as well, which is that the wearing of black. In some cultures, the Jewish people were forced to wear black, or black was a colour that was worn a lot within their groups. And so there's an association of witches wearing black.
Yeah, and some of these things are similar for the Romani as well. So yeah. Anyone who didn't set down roots and wasn't known for generations in a community, they were outsiders. And outsiders become easy prey when the harvest fails, or when you get a crop of sickness through the cattle or whatever.
Yeah, or when there's thievery.
Yes, or thievery. Well, in fairness, that's not entirely that there is a Romani tradition of, if it's not missed, then it's not really theft. So that's just a completely different mindset.
But you know what I mean.
Yes, I do.
The point is that witches, the word witch was just scapegoat. And I think throughout history it's changed so much because it's become synonymous with the things that we are afraid of during certain periods, and it's the things of the unknown. But the criteria of what it is to be a witch has been bastardized and altered to suit political and religious criteria for centuries.
Yeah, definitely. Let's have a look at some witches in speculative fiction, because it's taken it in yet another direction again. It's taken it us away from alewives and keening women and wise women and herbalists and into some strange waters. I mean, we were saying at the beginning that while we both love Harry Potter, the word witch in that isn't actually representative of the historical figure.
No, it isn't in the least. It's just become synonymous with woman who can do magic is a witch.
Yeah.
I want to mention the Six of Crows and Crooked Kingdom books. I mean, the Grisha trilogy, but I haven't read a lot of the Grisha. And that is that there is in particular this feud that is going on between the Grisha and the Druskalov.
Yep.
And the Druskalov are basically Puritans. They're Puritan, sort of verging on Nazis, let's not lie. And they are... These boys are recruited from small, very upright villages.
They're basically like the Nazi youth, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And they are made to see these Grisha, who have powers and who are trained, as evil. And every now and again, one of the Druskala characters, Matthias, who falls in love with Nina, who's a Grisha, he does call her witch.
Yes.
And I actually felt that this was a really appropriate use of the word witch, because it went more than just, I'm afraid of you, therefore I'm going to call you witch. It was much deeper than that. It came from that very religious background. It came from that genuine belief that she was something evil.
There was a deliberate othering, wasn't
there? A deliberate othering from someone above him. It was a political deliberate othering from someone above him, which had been fed down to him. And this is a true believer. This is someone who has been crafted from a very young age to see these people in only one light. And so for me, it felt very accurate to how the word witch would be used and to the sort of the scenario. And I really quite liked that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that worked for me too.
Mm.
But you do find that when you've got a book with... I mean, I mentioned the Casket Girls and the Romeo Catchers, and, okay, the witches in that do have to kind of work at their powers, but they are born with something a bit different.
Yeah.
And you can have different elemental magics to start with, so one of the five elements. And then there's the Anne Rice's The Witching Hour, where it's a bit more subtle, but she actually takes it down to ultimately a genetic level. You know, there are women who have, and men in fairness, but mostly women who've got a slightly different strand, or slightly different gene. And it's been, you know, through the constant years of incest, bred in until it's really, really strong in certain individuals. And... there's less flashes and bangs, as it were, but they can do things like read people's thoughts and speak to creatures from the other world. They are different. They're still human.
Yeah.
And yet they've got this little something extra as well. Whereas I quite like the idea of witches perhaps being a tiny bit more psychic than most humans. As in, you know, most humans have some sort of ESP. It's basically vestigial and isn't very useful most of the time. But, you know, everyone's got that, okay, something weird's going on type ability. Yeah. But perhaps, you know, witches are in fiction have slightly more of that. And then decide
I love that little footnote. Witches in fiction.
In fiction. Have slightly more of that. Well, yeah, you know, I don't want to offend anybody. Have slightly more of that. And then want to and end up developing it through study and practice. And then you're looking at things like the Gardnerian witch movement, the Alexandrian witch movement, which was more based in Ireland, I think. Mm-hmm. And this was back when it was still illegal in Britain to be a witch. That only got repealed in 1956.
Goodness me.
And then that was replaced by the False Fortune Telling Act, which was only repealed in 2008.
So, how do you know if it was false fortune telling?
I think it was the Fraudulent Mediums Act.
Yeah.
And they would prosecute you on false fortune telling under the basis that you couldn't possibly know the future. And that there's all these little bylaws that go with it. And ultimately, it would have been quite difficult to prove, I think.
Yeah.
But the fact that they then felt the need to have it in there. Anyway, that's more of a con artist type thing. But I think, I'm not absolutely sure, but I think France took even longer to repeal their Witchcraft Act. And they actually hanged a witch in the 1920s.
Wow. I did not know that.
I'd have to check my facts, but I'm pretty certain.
That wouldn't surprise me, to be honest.
It was Paris.
Oh, Paris.
So that's kind of why I like the Whitby Witch series, because, yes, they do have slightly more ability. Like, you have Alice Boston, who had the sight, so she can see things like the Aufwelders and ghosts and things.
Yeah.
But she's studied and practiced and things, so she does have a little bit more ability. She knows things.
Yeah.
But more of it is to do with this sort of connectedness.
Yeah.
And it's the same reason I like the Terry Pratchett witches, who are a little bit ridiculous, let's be honest, and Tiffany Aching. They're basically community care workers who just happen to have a bit of ESP as well, which helps them.
Yeah. But everyone treats them as more mystical than they kind of are.
Yeah, and it's a case of, well, sometimes I'm going to play into that stereotype because it'll get things done a lot faster and I'll have to do a lot less explaining.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they can do real acts of great magic. It's just a case of most of the time it's not practical to do that, so why would you bother? Above all, witches are sensible creatures, unlike wizards.
Screw wizards.
In the Terry Pratchett Discworld universe, they're well worth reading, the witch books.
Definitely gonna have to get down to those ones. But of course you've got witches in your books as well.
Yes, I didn't intend for that to happen. One of them just slipped in there. That's Edie Gillis.
Sorry. She slipped in when you weren't looking. You just went to get a cup of tea and she crawled down from the ceiling. And
that is quite literally what happened.
I'm so frightened.
And, you know, I will put a geese on you if you don't include me in the book. And I'm just like, okay, fine.
In you go.
And that's the thing, because when you're in the Unveiled books, there's a lot of psychics and various other dark creatures and things. But Edie Gillis was, you might find out more of this in a different series, but she was actually brought up as part of the Gardnerian witchcraft movement,
mm-hmm.
and wasn't entirely enamoured of the whole thing, but at the same time didn't want to break away from witchcraft entirely. So she studied, she's extremely clever, and there was all sorts of stuff going on during the Second World War, which you will find out if I ever write the series and anyone ever reads it.
So but
she's not actually a natural psychic. She's somebody who's tried to develop these different abilities and things.
Mm.
And she's not, I wouldn't say she's 100% like well-intentioned or nice. She's definitely not a nice person.
I can agree with that. She's not a nice person. She's not a bad person, but
she has a very definite sense of what she thinks should happen.
Yeah.
She's like slightly worse version of Mrs. Cranford, really.
Yeah. No, she is an interesting character. And it is an interesting idea, because she was different to Emmeline.
That obviously Kestrel would never have got on with her.
Yeah. Well, the idea in Kestrel is that wizards and witches, wizards are the ones who are born with power, and that's usually because they have some ancestry which is to do with fairies or demons or something along those lines. So they actually have blood in them, which is part of a magic creature. So they are technically a sort of different species. Whereas witches are human, and what they do is that they tap into other power sources. So wizards basically have their own battery, and witches work on the mains. They can tap into, and some people are better at it than others, and some people have a natural sort of affinity to be able to tap into things. But they are just human. But the reason Kestrel doesn't like witches is because more often than not, what witches do to get power and to tap in is rather than just using the very sort of the slow kind of, I'm going to gently affect the sort of the atmosphere around me, they tap into things like demons and they make contracts to get power instead. And they do really gross stuff to be able to get a more sort of a bigger flash of power, which they can then manipulate. And that's why Kestrel doesn't like them, because she's like, it's so gross, just stop. Because a lot of them just don't have the patience for the very sort of, not wishy-washy, but you know what I mean, the very sort of the slow burner, the slow development.
Yes.
Kind of thing, especially if they're young. So, yeah, that was the idea behind witches. Now, I feel like we should finish this episode with an inquisition. Jules.
Yes.
Are you a witch?
I take the fifth. And we don't have the fifth over here.
I plead the fifth, Your Honour.
I plead the fifth. There are witches in, there have been witches in my family, which, you know, if my mother ever listens to this, will come as a great shock to her, because I think she's just sort of not noticed. and I was actually quite surprised to find out there have been people. I suppose the thing is that it's not necessarily a religion, it's sort of a philosophical mindset. Mm-hmm. And you can be Catholic, or you can be Church of England, or you can be atheist, and yet you can still be a practicing Wiccan, effectively.
Yeah.
And there's definitely been some on both the Irish and the Scottish side, so it must be all that Celtic blood.
Yeah. Surging through your veins.
Yeah.
attracting all the witches to your books.
Well, as we said, they crawl out of the walls.
That's so creepy.
I just want to give you nightmares. That's the only thing I can say.
You're going to. I'm just gonna like lizard people, just crawling down the walls. Oh God! Get out!
That
it's not Halloween yet.
That is an interesting point though, because if you ever have any association with Wiccan groups, they tend to have sort of the newish witches,
mm-hmm.
And hereditary witches. And what I understand, I mean, some of them can be quite elitist groups. Let's be honest, humans are basically on a bell curve, and you've got angels at one end and assholes at the other, and most of us are somewhere in the middle. So, you know, being a pagan or being a witch or whatever, or doesn't necessarily make you a better person. I mean, you should be trying to be a better person, but in the same way that being a Christian, you should be trying to uphold your morals, but people don't always.
Yeah.
So it makes you know, you still have to work at it. And ultimately, the heredity things, hereditary witches, it's generally passed down in a line through a family.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to be quite strict about who is allowed in, because it's to do, once again, with the heredity of the line.
Yeah.
And things like books and stuff get passed down. And then with the others, the lineage is much more to do with who, if you join a coven, it's who takes you on, who speaks for you, who elders you, mm-hmm. as well. And then you would then pass that on lineage wise to, if you speak for somebody and then elder them, etc.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite interesting from an outside perspective, I think.
Well, there you go. Contact us. Send us a message telling us some who you're.
Sorry, you made that sound. I just talked about covens and you said contact us. So we're not recruiting, guys.
We're recruiting. We're starting a coven. It's happening. All these witches are crawling down my walls, Jules. I've got to do something with them. Start a group. It's that, or we start a band. We'll call ourselves the Coven. It'll be great. So send us a message, leave us a comment telling us who are your favourite witches, which witches scare you, and oh god, this is going to get very confusing. Which witch is which? And what are your favourite books or films that include witches, wise women, or ale's wife, or an ale wife? And yeah. Thanks very much for listening.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note, no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.